Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers who work in many fields and teach us the art of living, how to work in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace, and use the technological advances available to us. The information we present is taken from the writings of Benjamin Krem, a disciple of a Master of Wisdom, and also from teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. We include teachings from many schools of thought to demonstrate how they are working out in the world. Our articles are often inspiring. We hope to inform the public of actions taken around the globe to improve conditions for us all and to find means of addressing some of our most pressing problems.
Hello everyone and welcome to our program. We're going to focus on America today and we'll start with an interview with Philip Aston. This was published in Share International magazine in December 2018. And Philip Alston has been the UN Human Rights Council's Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty and Human Rights since 2014. He has also worked with the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights and UNICEF, among other UN and non-governmental agencies. Alston teaches at New York University School of Law, focusing on international and human rights law. As Special Rapporteur, he was invited by President Obama's administration in 2016 to study poverty in America, an invitation that was extended under President Trump's administration. The study culminated in a 2017 report titled Statement on Visit to the USA by Professor Philip Alston. And Professor Alston completed a similar mission to the UK in November 2018. So Jason Francis interviewed him for the magazine.
And the first question is, what surprised you most from your research on poverty in America? The reply is, the lack of interest in the subject. It was once pretty high on the political agenda in the United States, but now it seems to not be of major concern to either of the two political parties. I'm accustomed to going to countries that go out of their way to try to reassure me that even though there are major problems, they are doing everything they can to address them. And if only they had more resources, they would devote them to improving the plight of those living in poverty. What I saw in the United States was the opposite. My visit coincided with the massive tax cuts that were put in place during the very week that I was in Washington, D.C. These cuts not only took money that might otherwise have been devoted, even in small part, to poverty elimination, but set the scene for what we are going to see after the midterm elections, November 2018. A very powerful push to say that the national deficit needs to be reduced by virtue of major cuts to welfare programs. The Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, has indicated that there will need to be major cuts in a lot of social and other programs after the elections.
Why do you think neither the Republicans nor Democrats seem to be making a major issue of poverty elimination? The electoral system has a lot to do with it. First of all, there aren't any smaller political parties. So protest votes that the poor and others can make in other countries aren't feasible here. Secondly, all of the various efforts that have been made to minimise voter turnout among the less wealthy classes have succeeded. People who are not wealthy are not convinced that their vote is going to make any difference. And the way in which the economic system has been evolving seems to reinforce the belief that it doesn't matter how you vote. Protest votes for the candidate who claims he will drain the swamp, in other words, eliminate government corruption and so on, ends up just accelerating the push towards a neoliberal future which marginalises poor people. What were the major areas of focus in your report? I insisted on a human rights framing of the issue so it wasn't just another report on poverty. It looked at the way in which the 40 to 45 million people living in poverty in the US affects the political system and inhibits their access to civil and political rights. Secondly, racism was a fairly strong theme in my report in terms of the use of racial narratives to turn the white majority against welfare by portraying it essentially as something that black people benefit from. In that sense, it's a continuation of many decades, even centuries, of previous policy.
I looked at the problem of children in poverty, which is particularly shocking. Something like 18% of children in the US live in poverty. That's a perfect way to store up major problems for the future because you are producing children who are less well educated, less healthy, and even less mentally developed because of the disadvantages from birth onwards. That's going to perpetuate the cycle of poverty and cost the society dearly. One would have thought that even if there were no compassion, there would be a strong economic argument for investing more in that particular group, but that's not the way it happens. Next question, and what did your research take you? I beg your pardon, and where did your research take you? And Mr. Olson replied, my mission was just under 2 weeks, so I didn't have a lot of time. I was keen to go to the West Coast because of the problem of homelessness, which really is epitomized there. That region also has a different political context and greater wealth available to address the problem than other areas. I felt that I had to go to Puerto Rico, not primarily because of the hurricane, but because it would be the poorest state in the nation, if it were a state. And it suffers particularly from the problem of poverty. Then I tried to ensure that in between I could get a bit of a cross-section, and I ended up going to Alabama, Georgia, and West Virginia, apart from the time that I had to spend in Washington, D.C., which was essential in order to meet with people from government and civil society.
You mentioned that there are 40 to 45 million people in poverty in America. Do any of these 40 to 45 million people live in conditions of extreme poverty similar to those found in developing nations? Here we get into an area that the US administration contested. A calculation was made by Angus Deaton, a Nobel Prize winner in economics, which suggested something like 5 million people in the United States live in what we might pejoratively call third world conditions, meaning absolute poverty no matter where they were living. That's extremely high. The US administration, on the other hand, responded to my report by relying on calculations from the Heritage Foundation, which is a conservative policy think tank. They basically threw out all of the traditional US Census Bureau statistics and instead relied on a measure of consumption to argue that there are only 300,000 poor people in the entire country. So the statistics are now contested in a way that they never were before. How did Nikki Haley, the US ambassador to the United Nations, respond to your report? The main reaction of Nikki Haley was that I was wasting the money of the UN and wasting the US administration's time. Rather than looking at what was the real problem in the United States, I should be looking at what was happening in African countries like Burundi or the Democratic Republic of the Congo. That was basically a way of saying that poverty was not a real human rights concern and there shouldn't be a report on it. That is a tragic response because once you deny the very existence of a problem, you certainly aren't going to start finding reasonable solutions to it.
And could you explain what you mean when you say that the existence of poverty in the US is a political choice? And Mr. Olson replied, in other countries, there are a range of programs such as basic health care provided for everyone, which are absent in the United States. This is of particular importance to those who are poor. Even the Affordable Care Act, the US health care program enacted during the Obama administration, doesn't really provide comprehensive coverage, and that is being scaled back fairly systematically. By cutting state, county, and city budgets for any form of social protection, the situation of people who are living on the margins is made much worse. rather than choosing to spend money on programs that have been clearly proven to help lift people out of poverty, the political decision has been to go in the opposite direction, cut back on existing programs, make it much harder to access them, and reduce the capacity of government at all levels to provide the services that one would expect.
And the next question, how does America compare to other developed nations in levels of income inequality, poverty, health, mortality, education, and civil rights? And Professor Alston's reply, America is a winner. It has the highest infant mortality rates in the developed world. Its healthcare expenditures are double the average in the OECD. That's the world's industrialized democracies. Even though the health outcomes in the US are far worse than anywhere else, its inequality levels are far higher than most European countries. It is ranked 36th in the world in terms of access to water and sanitation. It has the highest incarceration rate in the world, 4.3% of the world's total population, but 22% of the world's prison population. The statistics in the United States are quite stunning for one of the world's supposedly wealthiest countries.
And what effect do current US policies have on poverty? And the reply, the only substantial response that we have seen from the US administration is this common conservative refrain that what's needed is for people to get to work and then there won't be any poverty. In fact, we see record employment levels, but the jobs that are being created and salaries and conditions that are available are so grim that many of the people working full-time remain in poverty. They are very much in need of the supplemental programs like food stamps and others. But the administration is planning to save hundreds of billions of dollars on those very programs in the next few years.
And how do US policies have to change? The US has worked out a lot of policies over the years. Some have actually been very successful. There are many studies to show the numbers of people living in poverty would be much higher if it weren't for the food stamp program, Medicaid, housing subsidies, and so on. The first step is to just reaffirm their importance and make sure they are adequately funded. A second step is to recognise a basic right to healthcare, otherwise it's a vicious circle. People who are in bad health can't work. If the US doesn't take proactive measures to provide access to basic healthcare, they are storing up a lot of expensive problems that the country eventually has to pay for through emergency room visits. That debate needs to be seriously put back on the table.
And could you talk about the positive measures you have seen addressing poverty and income inequality in America? Well, it's a two-edged sword, of course, because things are so bad and there is such neglect at the governmental level, there is a lot more space opened up in civil society. It's certainly true there are a lot of wonderful civil society efforts around the country to step in where government should be working. I was very struck by St. Boniface Church in San Francisco, which opens its pews every day to the homeless when services are not taking place. That was a really wonderful gesture, which hasn't been replicated in many churches elsewhere. I saw some extraordinary efforts. One program that stood out in West Virginia provided free health and dental care and even some psychological care to poor people based on services donated by professionals. That group had around 20,000 or more patients each year, which was truly phenomenal. They were filling a major need, so there were quite a lot of these sorts of groups operating around the country. They are very inspiring in their own way. But at the end of the day, they are just band-aids on much bigger wounds. And that interview was with Professor Philip Alston, UN Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty and Human Rights, who was asked by President Obama to study poverty in America.
And now we would like to read to you an article by Benjamin Kremsmaster. And this article is titled The End of Darkness. Nowhere is division and disharmony more prevalent than on planet Earth. No other planet of our system is so immersed in competition, so ignorant of the benefits of cooperation. Nowhere else is seen the results of such folly. Anxiety, illness of all kinds, wealth and poverty side by side, insecurity and war. Why should this be so? Why should the inhabitants of this most richly fertile world quarrel so over its ownership? To some extent, the answer lies in the very richness of Earth's resources. Earth is the most densely material of worlds, and for long ages men have been enthralled to its material wealth and have fought and competed for its control. This has brought the human kingdom, and with it the animal, to the verge of destruction. With the nuclear bomb, man has brought his very existence into jeopardy. It is this fact above all which has prompted Maitreya's decision to return with his group to the everyday world at least 1,000 years ahead of the planned date. His aim is to coax men back from the brink, to show them how dangerous and destructive is their lust for power, their greed and competition. He will outline for them a simpler way, the way of cooperation, justice and trust.
Many there are today who in their hearts renounce the iniquities of the present materialism which pervades the planet. They long for justice and peace and march and demonstrate for their fulfillment. More and more, the peoples of the world are beginning to recognize that together they have the power to change the actions of powerful men. Thus does Maitreya trust the people and gives voice to their demands. Thus does he join their marches and adds his voice to theirs. Amid the general avarice, there is too an awaking of conscience among politicians and others in several countries. The debts of the poorest nations are being cancelled, and a new approach to the grinding poverty of so many is taking place. The fruits of 20 years of labour are beginning to ripen. Maitreya's beneficent energies are working their magic, and a new spirit is gaining strength. Thus, the attitudes and habits of countless ages are beginning to crumble before the tide of new and unstoppable energies wielded by Maitreya and his group. Men need have no fear. The meek indeed, the poor, the powerless, the toilers everywhere shall inherit the earth. Men will learn the beauty of cooperation and service, and one by one the bastions of power will fall. The empires of power and wealth will disappear as the new urge for sharing and oneness grips the minds of men. Thus will it be, and thus will man regain his sanity and start the climb again. And this was published in July-August of 2005.
And we'd like to finish the program with a message from Maitreya. And this is message number 11 of a series of 140 that were given through Benjamin Creme during public lectures in Euston Road in London some years ago. And this is just an excerpt from it. And it starts, "I'm emerging soon, but first I would point the way into the new direction which man, if he would survive, must take. Firstly, men must see themselves as brothers, sons of the one Father. This is essential if they would progress one step nearer the Godhead. Throughout the world, there are men, women, and little children who have not even the essentials to stay alive. They crowd the cities of many of the poorest countries in the world. This crime fills me with shame. My brothers, how can you watch these people die before your eyes and call yourselves men? My plan is to save these, my little ones, from certain starvation and needless death. My plan is to show you that the way out of your problems is to listen again to the true voice of God within your hearts, to share the produce of this most bountiful of worlds among your brothers and sisters everywhere. I need your help. I call on you to aid me in my task. How can I stand aside and watch the slaughter, watch my little ones die? No, my friends, this cannot be. Therefore, I am come quickly among you once more to show you the way, point the path."
And thank you very much for listening to us today. If you want more information, look on our website at share-international.org or write to us at sharenz@yahoo.com. Thank you very much. Love and blessings to you all. Mm.